when I was outed publicly, my social media accounts were flooded with messages from men. And the thing is they're all using these fake accounts. And the funny thing is a large majority of them are from the parts of our culture that are the most homophobic.
Hey guys, I'm Ashley Dawn Rivard, and you are now Into the Dawn, a provocative podcast that looks at all things taboo, such as suicide, grief, sex, addictions, and more. Each week, I talk with experts who successfully investigate their areas of interest. And if you like what you hear, please remember to subscribe. Janae Marie Kroc is a transgender woman who also identifies as gender fluid and non-binary. Prior to her transition, she was a world champion and world record holding powerlifter, United States Marine that was selected to work in presidential security under President Clinton, cancer survivor, published author, licensed pharmacist, public speaker, and a proud parent of three sons. Janae was the subject of an award-winning documentary, Transformer, which is currently available on Netflix and many other streaming services. She hopes that by openly sharing her experiences, she can inspire those who can relate and help educate those who don't understand. In a national study, 40% of transgender adults reported having made a suicide attempt. 92% of these individuals reported having attempted suicide before the age of 25. In the last year, 53% of the transgender youth have been depressed and hopeless. I just watched your documentary, Transformer, on Netflix, right? And I thought it was phenomenal. I really would be what you'd consider naive to the transgender community and not understanding really anything about it, having no judgment towards it, just not knowing about it, right? So I really, you know, walked away going, wow, this woman now had really bared her soul, showed her struggle, showed a lot of what transgender people probably are going through. And really what I got from it is like, you are committed to living your truth. And it's so beautiful. I want to start with basically for everyone who's listening who might be naive to the fact, you identify yourself as transgender, gender fluid, non-binary, right? What does that mean?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked those things because a lot of people are confused by, you know, just a definition of being transgender. If you're not part of the community or you don't know anyone that is, you know, that can be very confusing for a lot of individuals. And then when you talk about being non-binary or gender fluid, I mean, that's, you know, further confusing, especially for people outside the community. So yeah, so basically what that means, I guess first I'd just like to start by saying I'm not a huge fan of labels. Because as soon as we label something, then, you know, let's just say, like, you know, I refer to myself as being transgender. So anyone that's listening to this, whatever they know about being transgender, maybe they know someone else, or maybe they'd seen something on TV, but whatever that is, then we have a natural tendency to apply that to that person, whether that fits or not. And trans people, the one thing I really want to get across is that we're just like everyone else, minus our gender issues. I mean, some of us are doctors, some of us are lawyers, some of us are really nice people, some of us are horrible people, some of us are athletes, you know, some of us are very intelligent, some aren't, you know, so it just, there's a wide range. I think as the community as a whole tends to get stereotyped, and but we exist in all phases of life just like everyone else, and we've been around as long as people have been around. There's evidence throughout all different cultures going back hundreds and hundreds of years of trans people have always existed. So that being said, to get back to your question of how I identify. So I identify as transgender, which basically means I have a strong cross-gender identity. I was born in what most people would consider a male body, and some people in the community refer to as being assigned male at birth. But from the time I was a young child, I knew by the time I was 4 or 5 years old that I just felt like I was supposed to be female, and I didn't understand it. I didn't know what made me feel that way. There was a lot of guilt and shame associated with that. I thought there was something wrong with me. And I knew that even as a young child that I couldn't tell anyone how I felt or it was not going to be received very well. I knew that like if I told my parents, they weren't going to be like, oh, that's great. It was going to be very, very negative. I was worried about what they might do to me. You know, as I got older, I thought, oh my gosh, would they, you know, would they put me into some kind of shock therapy? Would I, you know, how would I be treated? Like all this, you know, crazy stuff. But so I was terrified. I was terrified of anyone finding out. You know, I grew up in a small town in northern Michigan, in a very, like, out in the woods on a dirt road, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere, very small town. And I just, even as a young child, I already learned by that point that there were things that were okay for boys to do, and there were things that were okay for girls to do, and that those two things didn't cross over. And that me being me, if I said anything about how I felt, it was not, the outcome was not going to be good. So, you know, so basically I grew up with a ton of guilt, shame, and surrounded around my identity, but these feelings never changed, never went away, basically only got stronger as I got older. It was very confusing for me, and, you know, I was very tormented about it. And eventually I reached a point in my life where I considered suicide because I just didn't see any way that my life would work out and that I would ever able to be me. So that being said, going back to the non-binary and gender fluid. So gender fluid is a term people use to describe their gender having a degree of fluidity to it. You know, maybe some days they feel more masculine, some days they feel more feminine. And there's a lot of people that, you know, kind of feel that way too. I know a lot of women in the strength training world that have very masculine aspects to their personality. And, but with gender fluid, it's not stable. It's not like, I want to try to help people understand this without like confusing them, but at the same time, it's not like a magic thing that all of a sudden it's gone and it comes back. It's just, there's different degrees of it. Think of it as more of like a spectrum. And so some days, yeah, I have very masculine aspects to my personality. And some days I feel more masculine. Some days I feel extremely feminine. But my identity, who I am, that never changes. I've always had a female gender identity, and I'm always will. And as hard as I tried for the first 3 decades of my life, there was nothing I could do to change that. But like I said, I mean, I do have very masculine aspects to my personality, and that's what kind of allowed me to survive and flourish in certain parts of my life. Like I was naturally very competitive. I loved sports, and I felt very comfortable in that world. So I was in that, and I don't mean to imply at all that those are things females do not do or shouldn't do or anything like that. I mean, obviously, you know, sports have nothing to do with gender. But for me as a child, that was a world I could hide in because it was okay for little boys to, you know, play baseball. And then later I got into football and wrestling, and I was always obsessed with strength training. I was always obsessed with weightlifting. So I was able to hide in that world. I was able to immerse myself in sports. You know, I was obsessed with lifting. And then, and doing all those things, no one, you know, that was considered very normal. And so I was able to hide in those worlds and pursue those things. And that's what allowed me to kind of get through. And that's what I focused on. And I tried to bury down all the parts of myself that I knew wouldn't be accepted. And then getting back to the third part of that question, the non-binary. So non-binary people, essentially what that means, so we have a binary gender system. We have male and we have female. Well, non-binary people feel like they do not fit exclusively in one of those two categories. Some people feel like they're both. Some people feel like neither. They just feel like it's not that clear for them. There's not these defined boxes that they fit neatly into. So non-binary basically just means outside those two binary roles. And I feel like that somewhat too. Like I said, I have a female gender identity, but I'm not your typical girl. And I'm not even your typical trans woman. But so for me, really, all I'm doing with those terms is trying to help people understand when they ask me, well, how do you identify? How do you feel? I'm just using the best terminology that I have available to try to help people understand what it feels like to be me.
Right. No, it's well said. Thank you. You wrapped it up and there's no label. You're feeling into the energy in the moment of, am I in the more masculine or am I in the more feminine today? And I know in the documentary, it ended with you making just your vocal or your facial repair and your vocal. Why was it important for you to do the vocal prior to genital reconstruction?
You know, here's the thing. For me, I mean, and everyone's going to feel different. Yeah. Some people, there's certain surgeries for them that really matter more. There's a lot of you know, for example, I'm still quite muscular.
Yeah.
I'm nowhere near as big as I used to be, but I'm still very muscular. And there's a lot of trans women that would not feel comfortable that way, as well as cis women that wouldn't feel comfortable and it wouldn't feel feminine to them. For me, the muscles don't make any difference. I don't feel more or less feminine, but there are certain things, like, and my voice was one of them.
Got it.
My voice was extremely deep and very masculine. And for me, that's what trans people would refer to as feeling very dysphoric. Like, it would cause me a lot of anxiety. It would cause me a lot of stress. And whenever I'd hear myself speak, and just little things too, like talking to people over the phone and constantly being identified as male, that was very hard for me. You know, there's some women, I know some women that have very deep voices and they love it. And they, that feels very comfortable to them. But for me, it didn't. And the vocal cord surgery helped a lot with that. My voice still isn't as high pitched as I would like it to be, but it's a significant improvement over where it was. So, I mean, overall, you know, I'm glad that it made a difference, but, you know, to be honest, I wish it was still more feminine. And there are exercises and stuff I can do to continue to work on those things.
Yeah.
But for me, the voice has always been a big part of it. And the surgery was very important for me to be able to feel like me.
Yeah.
And the facial surgery was the other really big thing that, that really helped. And, but yeah, it's all about, you know, how we're comfortable in our own bodies. And for me, you know, face and the voice were two really big things. And I do plan to have bottom surgery. I'm actually trying to schedule. I've tried to schedule it in the past, and we were actually trying to include it in the documentary, but there was just no way to get it scheduled in time. And unfortunately, the popular surgeons have very long wait lists. The surgeon that I want to see has a 4-year wait list.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's,
oh my God.
Yeah. And we tried to talk to them and see if there was any way they could bump me in, but it wasn't happening. And then there's, you know, issues with insurance paying for it. Like, it wasn't that long ago that none of the insurance covered it, but now a lot more insurances are starting to cover at least the bottom surgery.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, there's still all kinds of hoops we have to jump through. It's not like you hear these things in the news, the media make it sound like anybody can just walk in and change their gender anytime they want. And the kids can do this. That's absolutely not true. It's a very difficult procedure that takes a long time. You actually have to have letters from two different therapists. You have to meet with the surgeon, have consults. And the therapist, it's not like you walk into an office one time and they go, oh, cool, you're cleared, you're good to go. No, there's recommendations. They want you to be living in your target gender role for at least 1 year, full time. And there's other things that they want you to demonstrate before they'll sign off on it. And like I said, it's not just one therapist. You have to get one therapist to approve, then you have to go see another therapist, and they basically got to go through the whole thing again. And then you've got to book a consult with a surgeon, and then usually there's a long waiting list, unless there are some surgeons that are, you know, more new to this that don't have such long waits. But for me, I don't want to go to someone who's, has only done a couple of these. I want someone that's got, you know, decades of experience.
Absolutely.
Makes sense. So unfortunately it's a very, it's a complicated procedure that takes a long time to get done.
I can imagine. And so what was it like then when you came out to your family? I'm sure that was beyond the most vulnerable, like I can't even imagine what you're going through, but just walk me through like what that was like and how it was received.
Yeah, well, as you saw in the documentary, my parents didn't necessarily take it the best. With a lot of trans people, it still could have been a lot worse. There's a lot of trans people, especially if they're younger, that their parents actually kick them out of the home, refuse to talk to them, won't see them. I know a number of trans people that have had that happen. They've been completely alienated from their families. My parents, they were shocked. The thing was too, so I had, for people who are listening that may not have seen the documentary, have never heard of me before, I basically excelled in the male world, even though I always joke that I was better at being a boy than the boys were, but I went in the Marines right after high school. I did very well there. I was selected for presidential security duty and actually worked in Washington, D.C. and up at Camp David under President Clinton. And, um, And then, you know, with sports, I played sports year round in high school. I did very well. And then later I got into very serious. I mean, I was lifting ever since I was 9 years old, but I got serious about competing after I got out of the Marines in my early 20s. And I competed for almost 2 decades. And eventually I broke the all-time world record in my weight class. And when I left the sport, I was the number one ranked lifter in the world in my weight class.
Wow.
Yeah, but the hard part about that was that the more success I had, the harder it felt to come out. I was this kid from this small town, and you know, everybody knew about me having success in these areas. You know, I was on the cover of magazines and things like that. And even though powerlifting isn't like pro football or pro baseball or something like that, it was still a lot of people had heard about everything mm-hmm. I'd been doing. And at my biggest, I was 280 pounds of muscle, and everybody, you know, a lot of my friends, my family, they all kind of looked up to me. And so I felt like I had been put on this pedestal, and I felt like if I was coming out, I was going to let everyone down. Mm. And I knew that, you know, no one was going to be happy about it. So even though I enjoyed the things I was doing and I loved to compete and I absolutely loved powerlifting, the more success I had, the harder it made it to come out, because now it was like I just kept building up these expectations higher and higher and higher. And I didn't want to let everyone down. And you know, and then people would be like, oh, they can do anything. They've done all this and this and that. And they'd be talking about me. And I'm sitting there thinking, you have no idea. There's so much about me that you don't even know. And so it was really, really hard. So then when I started coming out, I first came out to some of my very close friends and my immediate family, like my brothers and my mom and dad. And everyone was shocked. I mean, and the weird thing was I had worked so hard to hide everything, but there were times I thought people could tell. I was always paranoid growing up in the Marines, even into adulthood. I just felt like somehow people knew, you know, they could just tell. There were certain things I said or did, you know, maybe I slipped up and showed a little too much interest in certain things or whatever it was, but I felt very like vulnerable, and I felt that people knew what was going on. And when I came out, especially to like my mom and my brother, I was expecting them to actually be like, you know, we always kind of wondered, we saw this, we saw that. But then no, they had no idea. They were completely shocked. No one had a clue. And so I think that made it a little bit tougher because it came out of left field. They had no idea. Some of my friends actually thought like it was a practical joke. Like I was pulling a prank.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the funny thing is even in a sport like powerlifting, which is very like blue collar, very masculine, yeah. You know, it's full of all these like tough guys. And, but even in that sport, I was considered like the craziest one. Like I was considered the most intense, like I was considered like the alpha of the alphas. Mm-hmm. And so like, and some of my friends said, they were like, you are the last person I ever would have expected to be trans. Like I never saw that coming. And, so initially my brothers were shocked, but then they kind of came around. They were always very supportive of me. You know, it wasn't like there was never a question of whether I was going to lose like their love or their support, but it was just, they didn't know how to deal with it. They didn't know, especially my one brother, Kurt, who's only a year and a half younger than me. We were very close, and, he just didn't know how to relate to me that way. And the other thing, I think the biggest fear he had was losing the brother that he had always known. You know, in a lot of ways, we were kind of like a team, and it was really hard for him. Mm. He was afraid of losing all that.
Yeah.
And with my parents, you know, they just didn't see it coming at all. My mom she basically just kind of refused to talk about it. Like I told her and she just kind of acknowledged it, but I would try to talk to her and she would just change the subject or just wouldn't really say anything. And this went on for like 10 years.
Wow.
So the funny thing is during the documentary, when she talks about it there, that was the first time I'd ever heard her speak about it. Uh-huh. Like I had tried over and over and over again. And then, so like when she said that she felt like her son had died, that was the first time I'd ever heard her say any of this.
Yeah, that was intense.
Yeah, that wasn't necessarily the reaction I was hoping for. But, and then my dad, obviously, like the funny thing was the first conversation with him wasn't that bad. Like didn't really understand, and he kind of almost, it was like he was trying to talk me out of it. Like this was something I decided to do on a whim, you know, like, oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
But then by the end of the conversation, he was like, well, no matter what, I still want you to be in my life, you know, and it actually ended very well. And I thought, oh, great. But then after a little bit of time went by, then I, maybe after it sank in more, then it started to bother him more and more. And then he kind of got to where, like you saw in the documentary, he's basically, if you transition, I'm heading the other way. Mm. And I don't know, he never did. But he's been, I don't know, they've both gotten a little better. It's still not, you know, what I would hope for. My mom, just recently, my mom has really started to come around, mm-hmm. but she's still uncomfortable with it. And the other thing that makes it hard too, my mom has always been a tomboy. Mm-hmm. You know, when we grew up, she was always wearing blue jeans, t-shirts, never wore makeup, and it was kind of very rough and tumble. And like my aunts would tell us stories about my mom fighting when she was in high school and stuff like that. So the thing is, there's a lot of things that there are aspects of my personality that are extremely feminine, and I really enjoy all of that. And that's a big part of who I am. And it's kind of hard because I can't even share those things with my mom. My mom's not one, like, we're not going to go get our nails done together, or we're not going to talk about makeup and stuff like that. She just really isn't into any of those things. So it's unfortunate we can't relate to each other in that way, because she's just not that type of woman. But like I said, she's coming around. This was the first year she actually invited me to Thanksgiving, and then she came over to my house for Christmas, which I hadn't been to in about 5 years. And it was one of those things too. It wasn't like she would say, oh, you're not welcome here, don't come. It would be, she would kind of like, when I would ask about it, she would be like, well, I think I'm going to have something, but I'm not sure when. And then when she decided, she just wouldn't tell me. And then it was like, yeah. So it was like, she wouldn't tell me not to come, but she wouldn't let me know when it was. Yeah. And yeah, a lot of times I wouldn't find out. Like, my brother would text me and be like, hey, what time are you going to be at mom's? And I would be like, for what? He's like, and I'm like, she never told me.
Wow.
And,
how hurtful.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel? And did, like, how do you move through that?
You know, for me, fortunately, growing up the way I did, I was the oldest of three children, and I was always very independent. And I learned, and like my parents, neither of them graduated from high school. We are from a very small town, so they're not educated. And I was just always a very ambitious person. And I just learned from a young age, if I wanted anything, I had to figure out how to do it myself. Whether that was like participating in sports or other activities, or just, you know, branching out into other areas of life, I just very much learned that if I wanted something, I was going to have to go get it. So the good thing was, is that I learned to be very independent, very young. And I also kind of acted in more of like a father role to my two younger brothers. And my dad, when we were growing up, had a lot of problems with alcoholism. And so there was like turmoil and stuff with that. And so I really stepped into more of a parent role, and at a relatively young age. So like I said, the good thing was it taught me to be very independent, and I grew up never really depending on anyone else. And so the good part of all that was that without their support, I was already used to kind of not having it in other ways. So it wasn't a lot different than what I was already used to. So I think that made things a little easier for me, even though it was hurtful. You know, I'm not going to lie.
Of course.
It was nice, you know, but I was also used to having to do things on my own. Even like with this whole process, going to my surgeries and stuff, all these I've gone on my own.
Wow.
Except my brother did come to one with me, and it was funny because it was completely unannounced. I didn't know. He was like a few days before I went, I've actually had two facial feminization surgeries. The first time, I had one, and I just had some minor stuff done. I was a little bit worried, like, oh my gosh, what if I come out looking weird? What if it's, you know, I didn't know, really know. I mean, I'm the type of person, if there's something I want to know or something I'm interested in, I research everything. Like, I buy every book on the topic, I get online, and so I felt like I knew what I was getting into, but still, you know, the idea of changing your face, like, was, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, what if it, comes out really weird? And then I had done one thing that spooked me. You know, back then, what was that, about 10 years ago, when I was researching it, maybe even longer than that, 10, 15 years ago. And one of the things I did was there was this person on the internet that was also transgender themselves. And they were, I think they were an artist, and they were doing, you could pay, I think it was, I don't remember what it was, like $200-$300 or something. And they would basically take your photos, basically kind of like the apps they have now that, you know, will do male, female faces. Yeah. And they were doing that for trans people, though, to give them an idea of what their surgery would look like afterwards. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's not going to be 100% accurate. And the way, I paid this person to do this. And when I got the results, I didn't like how it looked at all. It wasn't what I was hoping for. And it really spooked me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I come out? Cause I felt like it was really weird looking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, if that's how I'm going to look, maybe this isn't what I want to do. And so it really spooked me. So anyway, I had one facial surgery and just had some minor things done. And then it turned out I was really happy with that. And then I just wanted more. And then I had the second one, obviously, when we were filming the documentary, and I'm very happy with those results. And that's something I have zero, honestly, every single step I've taken, I don't have any regrets. Yeah. Like, I mean, and with a lot of transgender people, you know, you'll hear, you know, if you talk to them later on, typically the only regret they ever have is that they didn't start the process sooner. I mean, there are people out there, I mean, once in a while, and there's certain groups that try to promote this and act like it's a big thing. But there are some people that have transitioned and regret it, but that's extremely rare.
Is that because they don't feel, do they not feel like?
Well, I think it is and I haven't honestly spoke to any, I don't know of a single person I've actually met that feels this way, but I have seen people online talking about it. My suspicions would be from what I've heard those people say. And from what I know, my guess is that part of it may be that they had other issues in addition to being transgender. And they probably didn't resolve some other things before they went through the whole procedure. And sometimes they have this assumption that once they transition, it's going to solve all their problems in life. No, it's going to help with your gender issues. But if you've got other issues, it's not going to change that at all. And then some people too, I think if you're not able to pass, and in the community, what that means, like, so if you transition and you can blend in and everyone, no one knows that you're transgender, that's what people call as passing. And I really hate that terminology, because what does that imply? Either you're passing or you're failing. And so that means if you transition and if you're not able to blend in, then, you know, that's somehow failing. So I don't really like how that's phrased at all. But the reality of the situation is, if you're not able to pass, life can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. So if some of these people transition and they're never really accepted into that gender role, they don't pass, they're treated very poorly. And I experienced a lot of this, especially when I was first going out into public and my makeup and fashion skills left a lot to be desired. And plus, you know, I was this super muscular person. And it was really interesting, because at that point in my life, At one weekend, I might be competing at a world championship or signing autographs at a fitness expo somewhere, and people are waiting 2 hours in line to take pictures with me and just to get my autograph. And then I go back home and I'm a pharmacist and I have a family, and now I'm this person who's just, you know, another middle class, you know, person working their day-to-day life. But then when I started going out into public presenting as female and I didn't pass, then now all of a sudden I'm a third class citizen and I'm being treated horribly. People are laughing and snickering at me. You know, I'm being mocked behind my back when I walk past people. Sometimes people would yell like insults and stuff as I walk by on the street. And so it was a really interesting time, because, you know, one day I'm being treated like a celebrity. Another day I'm just, you know, the average person living my life. And then yet another day, now I'm less than human. Huh.
How did that make you feel?
At first it was really difficult. But I didn't have any illusions. I knew what I was getting into and I was prepared for it, but it was still hard. And fortunately, honestly, I worried that worse would happen. I was never, and probably in part due to my size, I was never physically attacked. And that's actually quite common with trans women. But I did have one night I had, 4 or 5 guys follow me into a parking garage and, followed me all the way to my car. And, it was very clear that their intent was to assault me. And I think the only thing that stopped them, I think when they got close to me, it was in the summertime and I was wearing like a spaghetti strap dress. And I think when they got close to me and saw how muscular I was, I think that made them hesitate just long enough for me to make it to my car and get inside. It was really spooky because it was late at night. I got in my car and I closed the door, and literally the one guy was standing right against my door, like mean mugging me through the window. And there were like four other guys behind him, and they all had these angry looks on their faces. And they just stared me down and never said a word. And I just discreetly locked my door really quick, started my car, backed out and left. And they never did anything, but it was very clear that they did not have good intentions.
Why do you feel that we'll call them haters, towards the transgender community? Why do you feel that this is happening?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with our society and how we view things. I mean, first of all, we live in a patriarchy, right? So we're men. Unfortunately, men are considered at the top of the social pyramid, and women are considered less, which is obviously completely ridiculous and horrible, but that's the society we live in. And the thing is, the other thing is, we live in a very heteronormative society, meaning that heterosexuality is considered the norm. So anybody who exists outside of that dynamic makes a lot of other people uncomfortable. And some of it, sometimes it's because maybe people have a very strict religious background and they've been taught that that's wrong and that's sinful. So there's a lot of people that get very upset and very angry thinking that you're breaking their rules. And then for other reasons too, the funny thing is, not to say transgender men don't have a hard time. They do. Life can be very challenging for them as well. But we do see a disproportionately large amount of the violence is directed at trans women and not trans men. And I think that speaks to two things. Number one, homophobia and transphobia, and the fact that, there's this whole idea that trans women are just trying to trick men into sleeping with them, and which is really preposterous. No one would transition solely to, be in a romantic relationship with a certain person. The funny thing is, a lot of transgender women still date women, identify as lesbians. Some are bisexual, but their sexuality is all over the place, just like in the rest of the population. That's another misconception, that all transgender women are attracted to men. Some are, but a large number aren't. But I can, speaking from experience too, as soon as I came out, you do get a lot of men that are quite interested in transgender women. Hmm. And it's something they're very secretive about. There's something they don't want anyone to know, but for whatever reason, a lot of men that identify as straight men are very attracted to trans women.
But would they be gay?
No, they're not gay. They're not gay because a gay man would obviously want someone who's masculine or someone that's, looks like a male. The men that are into trans women like someone that looks very feminine, acts feminine, and is pretty and beautiful in all the ways that we assign with femininity. But there's something about the fact that they blur those gender lines that they find very attractive. And immediately after when I was outed publicly, my social media accounts were flooded with messages from men. The thing is, they're all using these fake accounts. The funny thing is a large majority of them are from the parts of our culture that are the most homophobic. So it's all very secretive, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of them, and a lot of them would admit right off the bat, they would say that, that they're very attracted to you or whatever, but that no one can find out. So in some cases, I think a lot of the, and this is, well documented, but there's a lot of men that pursue trans women knowing that they're transgender, but then end up having sex with them. Then they freak out afterwards and they're like, oh my God, what if someone finds out? Like, what are they going to think of me? They're going to think I'm gay. They're going to think all these things. And then they end up turning that anxiety and that anger on the trans woman. And literally it's not uncommon. Like, many women have been beat to death.
Oh my God.
Right after.
Wait, okay. Sorry. I have a few questions about this. That's okay.
Sure, of course.
I'm pretty naive mm-hmm. about it. And I apologize if anything comes out not PC. No. And so these men who are into transgender women and then they have sex with them, then they freak out and they go, oh, I'm gay. Do they think that that transgender woman is fully reconstructed down there, or they know she's not?
Well, here's the interesting thing. A lot of times they usually want to know ahead of time.
Okay.
And a lot of the men are more interested if you have not had bottom surgery.
Okay.
Yet.
Then that makes them gay.
No, well, no, because it's not the same thing, because gay men are not interested in trans women.
But it's still a penis. Okay,
you're confusing, but let me. Yeah, exactly. But and that's part of the attraction, but it's not because they're attracted to men. And I know from being outside the society and stuff, this seems very confusing. But the problem is with sex, we have a very genital focused view of sex, mm-hmm. right? Like it's all about, well, if you have a vagina and you have a, if you have a penis and you're interested in a vagina, that makes you straight. If you have a, you know, if you're interested in a girl who has a penis, you must be gay. Well, they're not. They're not at all, because they have no interest in dating other men. They don't find other men attractive. They don't find masculinity attractive. But there's something, for some reason, something about a woman who still has a penis is very exciting for them. And it's actually quite common.
That's okay.
I read some statistics a while ago that transgender pornography is one of the most popular types of pornography on the internet. There is a large subset of the population that's very interested in this. And any trans girl will tell you that if they've dated, if they're interested in dating men, they will tell you when they first transition, this will sound crazy to a lot of people, but it's the absolute truth. It is harder to find a male partner after you have bottom surgery. So once you have made that transition and you have a vagina, a lot of trans women will find, yeah, it sounds crazy, but there's a lot of people that's what they really want. But there's so much stigma attached to it. No one's talking about it. No one admits it. But it's very, very common.
You know, it's interesting, because here you are as a transgender woman who you put everything on the line to live your truth, right? And you fight every day for just this, your authenticity and who you are, and breaking down these stigmas. And then you have these so many different cultures, but it's just like those men who are hitting you ladies up probably are still shaming transgender, right, to fit in. Like they're hiding. Like everyone's hiding, and it's just like,
well, it's absolutely, and the worst part is these are the same people that when laws come up to help give us equal rights, they're voting against them. They're the same people that are telling their buddies, you know, very prejudiced jokes behind closed doors. They're the same one that if something comes up about transgender women, they're going to mock you and make fun of you and ridicule you. And then yet they're 2 seconds later, they're texting you privately and wanting to meet up. And I've had this conversation. If anybody out there is wondering, I actually have a girlfriend, and I've always been attracted to women and still am.
Does that make you a lesbian then?
I don't really worry about definitions.
I know there's no labels.
Yeah, but I would describe our relationship more of a lesbian relationship, but to be honest, it's a little blurrier than that.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not this clear cut, and neither of us really care about it. But my girlfriend has always dated women since high school. I'm the first trans person she's ever dated. And when we met, I don't know if she really even thought about it or whatever, but I think she assumed I was further along in the transition than I actually was at the time. But it had, you know, like if she had saw me as a male, she would have not been interested in me at all. But it's just, like I said, we like to act like things are very black and white, mm-hmm. and we like to have these strict boxes like, oh, you're gay or you're straight. But the reality of the situation is almost all these things exist on a spectrum. And I think and don't get me wrong, there are people that are 100% straight. There are people that are 100% gay, but I really think there's a lot, and this is my experience. And from coming out, I've had so many people reach out to me and share these things. And people that I was completely shocked by. I have some of the manliest men you've ever met, like some of the, you know, the type of guys that everyone would be like, that's a bad dude, you don't mess with him. After I came out, they would reach out to me and tell me that, you know, everything from them having their own gender issues to, you know, they, like one of my good friends who was this 365 pound power lifter told me that he had and he'd always been in relationships with women, but that he had a friend from high school that they would meet up every once in a while and have sex. And this was something they'd been doing since high school. And he had no interest in being in a relationship with this person, but there was something that both of them found very satisfying about sharing this intimacy. And I just, I began to realize very quickly, like, how common this stuff is. And there's so much of it that goes on, but there are so many people hiding it. And like I said, I mean, if I showed you my inbox of DMs, you would be blown away. Like, how many daily still I have people, you know, reaching out to share messages and things like thanking me for being open because it's helping them deal with who they are.
Of course.
But then also men pursuing me or, you know, wanting to meet up. And I've had this conversation with guys, like, trying to get them to understand the damage they're doing by being closeted about all of this and not being willing to be open, and you know, trying to encourage some of them, like, hey, look, you need to talk about these things, because there are a ton of men who feel the same way you do. And then they'll be like, oh, I can't, I absolutely not. If anyone ever find out, all my friends would, you know, no one would be friends with me. You know, my parents would be extremely upset, blah, blah, blah. But they don't realize, by staying closeted about all of this and continuing to act the way they do, that they are furthering harm towards that entire community. And so it's a really sad thing. And it just, like I said, it all goes back to the stigma associated with it, and the fact that we live in a society where those types of people are deemed less than someone who's, you know, hetero and cisgendered.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, I just want to commend you for literally stepping up and living your truth, because you freed yourself, even though you deal with, you know, so much. But, and also you're freeing so many other people. And that is, like you said, it is such the basis of depression and anxiety when we are holding shame within ourselves and not being able to express ourselves. I think I mentioned to you, I have been a volunteer at the Suicide Crisis Line. And the stories that I hear over and over, which made me want to do a podcast that talks about taboos and stigmas, because I said, you know what? People are killing themselves. I took notes all the time. What is the common theme I'm hearing? It's not just about being, you know, in the LGBTQ. Whether it's being raped and this and that, and they don't realize that it's really about being able to express yourself. Say your truth, right? And that can save your life and many others. So it's demystifying all these taboos. And like you said in your documentary, which I love, you were talking about, which I do want to talk about, your relationship with your sons. You had made reference that it was so important to teach your sons not to conform, but to be truly, you know, who you are. And so if you didn't fully transition, you would have been teaching them it's more important to conform than live your truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, for them, the thing is that, the most important lesson was that if I didn't be true to myself and who I am, what am I teaching them? That we should suppress that and conform to society because we're more worried about what other people think. I thought that that's a horrible lesson. And for me, even though, like, my transition hasn't been what maybe a lot of people would consider, like, traditional, like, it wasn't as simple as going from male to female and that's it. And like I said, I'm still very muscular. I don't wear makeup every day. There are still I have a lot of interests and things I do that people consider quite masculine. Like, I'm into, you know, hot rod muscle cars, and, you know, I still love lifting weights, and that's just all part of who I am. I really just basically got to the point for a couple of reasons, but to where, like, I just was like, you know what? I don't care what anybody else thinks anymore. I lived like the first 3 decades of my life in terror, in complete fear of what everyone else thought about me. Trying to please everyone else and being so afraid and feeling horrible about myself. I had so much self-hate and loathing. I hated who I was. I literally did. And that's what people talk about, like, oh, you just, you know, trans people just want to be different. No, it's anything. Nothing could be further from the truth. I tried everything. You know, I prayed and I did all these things. I even, you know, I sought out these groups that supposedly cure trans people and
what?
All this stuff. And, oh my gosh, there's some crazy things out there. And the sad part is they're actually very harmful. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of any of the reparative therapy programs, they call them.
No.
So the boy's mother, the church she was involved in, they had one of these programs where they quote unquote cure, like, gay and trans people. And which of course is absurd. It has to do with the wiring in our brains. There's actually a number of studies that there's a lot of evidence for this now. And they've done MRIs of young children that are, you know, are already like affirming they're transgender, like by the time they're 6 or 7 years old. And so like me, I knew fairly young, a lot of kids do, but not a lot, not all do. Some of them don't figure it out until they get a little older. And with some, it might be a little more complicated than that. But anyway, they've done MRIs on the brains of these kids before any hormones, before they've done anything. And it clearly shows the brains working in ways that they've identified that the opposite gender works. Hmm. And there's been other studies they've done on postmortem people where they've dissected brains of transsexual women. And there was a specific area in the hypothalamus that in males had a greater androgen receptor density. And where women, it has a lower density. And in the trans women, in every single one of them, the density of those, in those receptor areas was the same as the cis females and very much lower than men. So there's a lot of evidence to indicate that being transgender is a physical condition, not a psychological one. It's actually differences in our brains. And they actually know, like, there's a couple mechanisms which they know it can happen, and there's other ways they're not sure. Hmm. But and we can talk more about that if you'd like, but the reality of the situation is it's not a choice. It's something that people deal with. But the problem, the big problem that we just touched on, was that there's all this stigma surrounding it. And there's stigma around sexuality, there's stigma around gender identity, and there's this huge stigma. If you don't fit in these boxes, if you're not quote unquote normal, then there's something wrong with you. And so that's how I grew up my whole life, thinking I was broken, thinking there was something wrong with me. And I hated myself. And the only, and that was part of the reasons that drove me so hard, like in sports and everything. I was so insecure about who I was that the only way I had to feel value about myself was to, you know, have some kind of success in sports or in school or in where I grew up at fighting. And so like, if it was, you know, inside, I hated myself and I thought everyone was looking down on me. And the only way I had to feel better was I had to beat them at something. If I was better than you at a sport, if I was smarter than you than school, if I could beat you in a fist fight, well, then you couldn't look down on me anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt. So that's all these things became part of my life and part of my world. And those were the only things I had to give myself some type of self-worth.
Yeah.
And it's really like my whole thing is, the whole reason for sharing my story and being as open as I am is I never want anyone to have to go through what I went through. All that self-hatred, all that self-loathing, feeling so alone. Like when I was young, that was pre-internet. I didn't even know there were other people in the world that felt like me. The first time I heard about another transgender person was when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old. Wow. I was homesick from school one day and saw there's a woman named Carolyn Cossey. She was actually a famous model who was in one of the James Bond films back in the 80s. And when she was in the James Bond film, someone who knew who she was from back home outed her. And then she was one of the first really well-known people that was outed as transgender. And then, so she ended up writing a book. Well, actually she wrote several books and was talking back in the 80s. She was on all these talk shows talking about it. And I remember the people in the audience just being extremely rude and saying some really ignorant things. And she handled it all with lots of grace. And I was very impressed. But I remember sitting there on the couch at home watching this and just being glued to the TV and being like, oh my God, I didn't even know this was possible. And, but then I still, even at that age though, I was still too terrified to admit to myself that I was like her. I was like, well, you know, cause she was this, you know, gorgeous model and extremely feminine. And, you know, and I, you know, here I was this athlete. And the other thing was too, between being into sports and being attracted to girls, that was enough for me to keep convincing myself that I wasn't trans. Because all the transgender women that I had heard about were very stereotypically feminine and were also attracted to men. So I'm like, well, I like girls and I like sports. I'm quote unquote okay. I'm normal. But in the meantime, you know, and looking back throughout my life, there were signposts all along the way. Yeah. I didn't go to any dances in high school. I didn't, I never went to a prom. I never went to Christmas dance because the idea of having to wear a tux and play that role was so uncomfortable for me that I just couldn't even do it. Yeah. And at the time I didn't know exactly what the problem was, but I just remember it filled me with anxiety like nothing else. And I just avoided it like at all costs. And, you know, cause I wanted to be the one in the dress and the one getting, putting my makeup on and all that kind of stuff. And I knew there was no way. I can't tell anyone that. I can't, you know, and back then, if I would have tried to do something like that, oh my gosh, I would have got the crap beat out of me.
I know.
It wasn't even an option. You know?
So when you go through those moments of deep shame and unworthiness, what do you do to shift out of that, you know, to keep going, to find your center and know that, you know, you are worthy of being who you are and using your voice?
Yeah, well, you know, that was a long process. It wasn't something I came to overnight. But one of the things I always remind myself of, and when I meet other people that are in the places where I've been, I one of the first things I try to get them to understand is, look, just because someone else doesn't understand you, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. If they lack the ability to understand you, that's their problem. Mm. It's not yours. So and that's one thing like to keep centered, just because like, you know, and even,
I love that.
I mean, 99.9% of the time I'm totally good with everything, but there's instances I'll be out in public and maybe someone will give me a disgusted look and, or say a certain thing. And I don't even know. And at this point, I don't even know if they're reading me as trans or if it's just because they think I'm a big muscular woman and they don't approve of that. Cause muscular women get a really hard time too. And, but you know, every once in a while somebody will do or say something, or, you know, and on the internet, obviously there's tons of trolls mm-hmm. and haters, and they'll post and say all kinds of things. And like I said, 99% of the time I do a very good job of it. It doesn't bother me one bit, but every once in a while, someone will say something or do something that just hits those sensitive spots just right. It'll kind of stir up some of those old feelings. And then I've just got to go back and remind myself, no, hey, look, that's their problem. It's not yours. And then I, you know, and I just remind myself all the ways that I am valuable and all the things that are important and all the people that love me.
Yeah.
And, you know, but yeah, it's really important to love who we are no matter what that is. And it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it sounds so simple, but, especially there's a lot of women that struggle with this because there's so much pressure on women from such a young age. You know, there's by the time they're young girls, they're already being told, you know, don't eat that, don't do this. You need to look a certain way. And you're, you know, so much of your value is placed on your looks and all these things. And so many of us grow up with all these issues. And then even for guys, you know, oh, you're not tough enough, you know, don't show emotion, you can't cry. And so many of us go through our whole lives and it's terrible because it's passed down from generation to generation. And whether it's a father putting all this pressure on their sons to be a real man or a mother pressuring her own daughters to about what a woman is, you know, it's just so many of us grow up like feeling broken and feeling like there's something wrong with us and we're not good enough.
Yeah.
And the reality is people are extremely complex. Yeah. We're all different and that's okay. Yeah. None, we shouldn't have to fit in a box. Mm-hmm. We don't. And trying to force everyone to be the same is just going to make for tons and tons of miserable
Absolutely.
People.
And I look at, like, I feel your struggle being transgender, even though people might not look like you do or know what the transgender experience is, I think we can all relate if we, you know, take off the labels and the black and white of what we've been taught or what we see versus going, oh wow, we're just alike. We have the same struggles. We all want to be lovable. We all have self-hatred in certain areas. We all have an issue with being comfortable on our skin. You know, like these are just, this is like a human experience.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I really think too, and that's what I've really realized. I think you hit the nail on the head. We all feel that way. And in one way or another, like there's, you know, I think every single person has something about themselves they wishes was, you know, was different. And for some of us, you know, it's like in the trans community, or especially with trans women, you know, it's always not feeling feminine enough or not feeling pretty enough. Yeah. But it's funny because you'll see these girls that are drop dead gorgeous. And you're thinking, oh my God, she must feel so good about how she looks and everything. And no, you talk to her and really get to know her. She's got issues too. There's certain things she doesn't like about her body, or maybe there's other things in her life that she's not happy with, but we all have insecurities. Mm-hmm. And we all have, you know, we all have our things. And then, like I said, for me, it's just, I want people to, if there's one thing that they can take from my story is that, just be true to yourself, you know, love yourself, and that happiness will come from loving and embracing who you are, not fighting against it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is too, is just to treat other people like they want to be treated. You know, like I want people to understand that, like some of the most meaningful messages I get or two types, either like, especially from kids, like that are where I was when I was growing up, and those like really touch me. And then I'll try not to get choked up, but yeah. But and then from parents reaching out to me and thanking me because they helped them understand their own children. Mm. And
I love that.
You know, I've had dads, you know, contact me and thank me and say that they, you know, they were basically going to kick their child out of their house and disown them and all this stuff. And then after hearing about my story, or people that had followed me, like some of these guys were fans of mine when I was, you know, still a competitive powerlifter, and it made them like kind of take a step back and reevaluate everything because I was someone they looked up to. And so those kind of things, you know, mean the most to me. And that's what really what I hope to achieve, is just to get people to understand, like, we're not all the same, and that's okay. And
but our hearts are all the same, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So my last question I have is, how big is the trans community? Like, how many people out there do you think are still hiding? Or, yeah, how many do you feel are hiding? And I know this is like a hard probably pinpoint, but, and then how big in the United States would you say is the trans community?
Yeah, you know, that's one thing. I'm glad you brought that up. And that's a difficult question because we have no idea. Because the thing is that, and there's two big problems with the trans community and trying to put a number on things. Because we have a huge part of the community that transitions and then disappears. Because life is so difficult for out trans people, and it's slowly getting better and better. And there's some areas where you can be out and open, and we're seeing more people, you know, like myself, that are very open about who we are, and it's becoming more and more common. But it's such a difficult life that so many people, once they transition, if they pass and they're able to blend in, a lot of these people just kind of move, start life over, and no one even knows they're trans. And I have a handful of friends like this. They, because it's so hard and they don't want to be known as this trans person, and they're afraid of discrimination, they're afraid of losing their job, they're afraid of, you know, someone kicking out of their apartment, they're afraid of, and with trans women, they're afraid of being attacked. And, you know, and then, you know, there's just so many ways it complicates your life and makes it so much more difficult. They move, start their life over, and they just blend into society, and no one even knows they're trans. And so these people are basically invisible. And we see that all the time. And then you've got the percent of the population, which, how do we even know? Like, I can just tell you there's tons and tons of people out there because I've had so many reach out to me, but they're still in the closet. They're afraid to transition.
Like 100,000?
Oh, what, probably way more than that. I would say, like, I mean, there's estimates that it's like somewhere between 1% and as much as 5% of the population. I mean, so you're literally talking about millions, millions and millions of people. I would, you know, it's so hard to say. We really don't know. It's the same thing with the LGBT community. As much as many people are out now, as many lesbians and gay men are out, there's a ton more. There's probably multiple times that still in the closet. So we don't really know. But literally, absolutely millions of people. And there's also another whole subset of people we haven't even talked about, is like the intersex community. There's all these people that are born with conditions where they're basically in between genders, and they're invisible. Nobody talks about it. Nobody knows about it. And there are literally millions of them as well. And
like bisexual?
No, people that are actually like conditions, like you've probably never heard of any of these, but Klinefelter syndrome. One of my trans friends actually has that. So, okay, so most people know that like a male has an X and a Y chromosome, and then women have two X's. Well, Klinefelters, they actually have a Y chromosome, but then they also have two X's, sometimes three X's or more. So they actually have like male and female DNA. And but the thing is, and then there's like androgen insensitivity syndrome, which are people that are have XY DNA, but they are born with a vagina, are raised as women, are treated as women, and most of them identify as women. And then when they hit puberty, they don't even find any of this out. Usually what happens, they hit puberty and they don't menstruate. So then by the time the girl's like, you know, 14, 15, 16, going to the doctor and saying, hey, I've never had my period yet, they go in there and they find out she has a vagina, she's developing breasts, but she does not have ovaries, she does not have a uterus, she has two undescended testes that never really developed and are up inside her stomach. And there's a lot of people that, like I said, there's one study that was done, and they looked at hospital records over like a 20-year period, and they estimated that somewhere in the nature of 1% of the population is like this. But and the reason why no one knows this, and or very few people do, and it's very not talked about, what happens when one of these children is born? I mean, sometimes they have, depending on the condition, and there's and those are only two conditions I mentioned. There's a whole bunch that fall under this, you know, intersex category. The thing is that if they have ambiguous genitalia, like they're born and maybe they have, you know, they kind of have a vagina or they have a very undeveloped penis. And, you know, when they're born, they look at them and they're not really, you know, they're kind of in between. Well, the first thing they do, the doctors run a bunch of tests on them and they try to decide which gender they're closer to. And then they go to the parents and say, hey, this is what's going on with your child. We think they, it would be easier to for them to grow up as a male. Or we think, you know, they might say, well, they technically have, you know, they technically are sort of male, but the penis is so small, it'd be easier to perform a surgery and just make it a vagina. And so then they'll perform surgeries on these babies instantly. And no one talks about it because the parents don't want to go home and tell all their relatives and all their friends, you know, whenever, what's the first question everybody asks? Oh, do you have a boy or a girl? They don't want to say, well, we don't know. And, wow. So there's so much stigma that they're operating on these young babies. And a lot of times it's just solely like, there's not health concerns. I mean, in some cases there are health concerns depending on the level of development. But in most cases, they're doing this just so they can put them in one category. Yeah. And the people that they're doing this to have no idea. They have no say in the matter. And then a lot of these adults are very upset that when they find all this out when they're older, that I never even had a say so in any of this.
And they probably feel in their skin uncomfortable. You know, they're dealing still with different.
Yeah. Well, the thing is too, yeah, some of them maybe identify more as one gender or another, or and some of them are fine kind of being in between, but they never had a chance to make that choice. And so that's another part of the population that's basically invisible.
Wow.
And
thank you for sharing that. That is, that's interesting. Very interesting. I really appreciate everything you shared because when I, after watching the documentary and, you know, watching videos on you, researching you, I felt like consciously or unconsciously, she kind of came down to the planet and maybe transgenders do, I feel. And you came in and you're like, oh, hey guys, I'm going to ruffle some feathers. I'm going to change my gender, make people uncomfortable, but it's only to like shine a mirror in your face to say, hey, like, I'm just showing you where you're hiding, you know, like, let's step it up here, people. Like, that's how I see you. And I'm just so grateful that you chose to live your truth because again, it's just, that's how we heal suffering, bottom line. You know, it's not easy, but that's how we heal it. And your story matters. And I hope people, you know, follow you. And where can people connect with you?
Okay. Social media, you know, everybody's at and Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And I have a new YouTube channel where I'm actually doing a lot of videos speaking about all these kind of topics and other things related to the trans community. And some of it just related to people in general, like struggling, you know, to be themselves or to have confidence in who they are. And, but you'll find that all under, for anyone who's interested, it's Janae, J-A-N-A-E, Marie, and then Kroc, which is the first four letters of my last name, but with a K, K-R-O-C. So if anyone, you know, wants to find me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, if they just search that, they shouldn't have too much trouble finding me. And then I also have a website, JanaeKroc.com. And I speak at events all over the country and women's conferences, you know, transgender conferences, high schools, universities, like you can find me everywhere.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, but yeah, I really love meeting people. If people want to reach out to me and share their stories or, you know, come say hi, I would love that.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on and giving me the opportunity to share my story.
Of course. That's it for today's podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. Please let me know what you think. Leave a comment, share, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.